I had been thinking about this for a little while and wasn't sure really how to put it together necessarily or where it was all going. But there was a question in my mind, and I wasn't sure, and I'm still not sure of the answer of it. So I'll just put it this way. How many Passovers do we see take place in the Bible? I thought I had a pretty good idea. And as I started thinking about it and looking into it a bit, I found that there are a number of different answers that people have out there. If you do a search on the word Passover, you'll find somewhere around 78 or so scriptures that include or mentions of Passover, maybe a few less verses than that, where it's mentioned a couple of times. But, you know, in some of those, it's just a command that we are to keep the Passover, but not specifically an occasion where the Passover was kept itself. I had heard one time in the past or heard a sermon maybe that talked about four Passovers in the Old Testament and four Passovers in the New Testament. I've run across articles that talk about, that deal with seven different Passovers and expounding on those. But when you just do a search, you know, a Google search, you know, it talks about 70-some mentions of Passover, but it says then that there are 23 occasions in the Bible where the Passover was kept. Nowhere could I find a list of those 23, so I'm not sure exactly where that comes from. I found another article where he said, oh, I just learned that there are 10 Passovers listed in the Bible, and as I mentioned, there were some that talked about seven of those Passovers. And so I thought it would be interesting to just take a look at some of the instances in the Bible where the Passover is kept. And I think the most obvious of those, at least if we kind of stick with a chronological order of things, the one that everyone would recognize takes place in Exodus chapter 12. So I thought we'd start there, and then we'll kind of go in a chronological order for the most part, but there's some things that I'd like to mention that maybe are the Passover, maybe not. So we'll get to those, and we'll talk about them a little bit as we go along. And I'm not exactly sure how many of these we'll get through, but we'll probably continue with this a bit more next time. So why don't we start here in Exodus chapter 12, starting in verse 1. And of course, at this time, we find Israel is in captivity in Egypt and not having a real good time. You know, they were in harsh bondage there. They cry out to God, and he hears their cry. So we're not going to go through all of the things that lead up to this, but here we are in the midst of that whole saga of, you know, God calling Moses and bringing Israel out of Egypt. And so here in Exodus chapter 12, it says, "Now the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, 'This month shall be your beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. Speak to all the congregation of Israel, saying, on the 10th of this month, every man shall take for himself a lamb according to the house of his father, a lamb for a household. And if the household is too small for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next to his house take it according to the number of the persons. According to each man's need, you shall make your count for the lamb.'" Now, I did read one thing that mentioned that traditionally that meant about 10 people per lamb. I don't really know. I haven't seen any thing about that, but I guess that could sound about right. I don't know. But seems logical. Doesn't really matter at this point. Verse 5, your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats. Verse 6, now you shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month. Then the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at twilight. And they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the lintel of the houses where they eat it. Then they shall eat the flesh of that on that night, roasted in fire, with unleavened bread and with bitter herbs. They shall eat it. Now, my purpose in this, too, just to make it clear, I don't want to, I guess, look at the timing or the debates between people that have different ideas or anything. I just want to look at the fact that here are instances where the Passover was kept. I may point out some things that did change along the way, but that's not really the purpose of why I want to go through this at all. I think I just read verse 8. Then they shall eat the flesh on that night, roasted in fire with unleavened bread and with bitter herbs. They shall eat it. Do not eat it raw nor boiled at all with water, but roasted in fire, its head and with its legs and its entrails. You shall let none of it remain until morning, and what remains of it until morning you shall burn with fire. Just a couple of notes there. This is different than what we see with the other offerings and sacrifices that are made that they were to eat, because most of that, when the priest took his portion, it was boiled, and in some cases they could eat that the next day and up to the following day, and then they couldn't. So this is something that is different with the Passover than some of the other sacrifices. Just for what it's worth, it was kind of interesting to note that. And then verse 11, and thus you shall eat it with a belt on your waist, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand. So you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. For I will pass through the land of Egypt on that night, and will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. And I do find it interesting when you look at the plagues that took place. They represented a lot of the gods of Egypt. And so God truly did take vengeance on the gods of Egypt. That he defeated all of them, the last of them being the Pharaoh, who they also considered a god. So, again, just something of interest and note there. Now the blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and the plague shall not be on you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. So this day shall be to you a memorial, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall keep it as a feast by an everlasting ordinance. And then if we drop down a bit to verse 21, I want to read verses 21 through 28 as well. It says, then Moses called for all the elders of Israel and said to them, pick out and take lambs for yourself according to your families and kill the Passover lamb. And you shall take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in the blood that is in the basin, and strike the lintel of the two doorposts with the blood that is in the basin. So he's going through this and how they're supposed to, do all of the things regarding the Passover. It says, none of you shall go out of your door or out of the door of your house until morning, for the Lord will pass through to strike the Egyptians. And when he sees the blood on the lintel and on the two doorposts, the Lord will pass over the door and not allow the destroyer to come into your house or to your houses to strike you. And you shall observe this thing as an ordinance for you and your sons forever. And it shall come to pass when you come into the land which the Lord will give you, just as he promised, that you shall keep this service. And it shall be when your children say to you, what do you mean by this service? That you shall say, it is the Passover sacrifice of the Lord who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt. when he struck the Egyptians and delivered our households. So the people bowed their heads and worshipped. Then the children of Israel went away and did so, just as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron, so they did. So one of those, unfortunately, all too rare occasions when the Israelites did what they were told to do, as they were told to do it. So, you know, it doesn't matter how directly we are told things and how much we know that we should do them, we still all do stupid things, don't we? So in that, we are, unfortunately, all too often just like them. Oh, let's see. I guess we can continue reading here, verse 29. It came to pass at midnight that the Lord struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of livestock. So God did exactly what he said he was going to do. So Pharaoh rose in the night, he and all his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. Then he called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, "Rise, go out from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you have said." So the events that they went through here and that took place led directly to their leaving Egypt as well. Verse 37, then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot besides children. A mixed multitude went up with them also, and flocks and herds and a great deal of livestock. Goes into the fact that they ate unleavened bread, observed the days of unleavened bread there, but what I really want to get down to is verse 40, where it says, "Now the sojourn of the children of Israel who lived in Egypt was 430 years. And it came to pass at the end of the 430 years, on that very same day, it came to pass that all the armies of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. It is a night of solemn observance to the Lord for bringing them out of the land of Egypt." And then down in verse 51, it kind of repeats this. It says, "And it came to pass on that very same day that the Lord brought the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt according to their armies." So what is that self-same day, or that very same day? And this is where we take a look at an instance where it is maybe a little bit difficult to prove that this takes place on the Passover. But one thing that I do want to note here is that all of the things that we just read in this chapter took place before Israel was given the law at Mount Sinai. And so while most Christians in the world would say that this is part of the law and therefore is no longer valid, this takes place and was commanded before what they think was done away with even happened. And so I think that there is evidence that maybe there were some Passovers that took place before this, that this is something that predates what most people think of as the Passover and the Feast of God. We also know that Jesus Christ was designated as the Passover before the world was formed. And so it's certainly not unreasonable to think that God would have put this in place from the beginning. And now, saying that, before we go and look at what maybe this self-same day is, I'll mention one other instance where, let's turn to Genesis chapter 4. Back in the time of Cain and Abel, And I have often wondered, and I certainly cannot prove this, but I wonder if this also took place around the time of the Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread. I want to read the first seven verses or so here in Genesis chapter 4, and I'll explain why I guess I wonder that. And again, I throw it out just as food for thought, I guess, of interest, and certainly not as something that we can point to and say or prove in any way. But it says, "Now Adam knew his wife Eve, and she conceived and bore Cain and said, 'I have acquired a man from the Lord.' Then she bore again, this time his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord." You know, this by itself doesn't seem to be an issue or problem, does it? In fact, we also know later that when Israel was to come into the land of promise, that they too were to bring an offering to God of the first fruits. So why does this seem to be a problem here? Because as we read further, we see that it was a problem. In verse 4, it goes on to say, "Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering, but he did not respect Cain and his offering. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell." So, you know, an offering, a grain offering, of and by itself is not necessarily wrong. But one of the things that we do find with the Passover is that there is no grain offering to go along with that. Most of the offerings do have a grain offering. Now, you could say that, well, he just brought that part of the offering and didn't bring a lamb or an oxen or another animal as part of the sacrifice. But it just makes me wonder if maybe the real problem was that this was definitely supposed to be a lamb and he didn't bring it. I don't know. Verse 6, it goes on to say, "And the Lord said to Cain, 'Why are you angry? And why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted?'" The implication here is that he knew exactly what he was supposed to have done, and he didn't do it. He chose for himself what he wanted to do. "If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it." You know what you're supposed to do. Do it, is the message there. So anyway, again, I find it interesting. Not sure, but maybe. So then let's go on to Genesis chapter 15, where we'll look at a possibility of where this self-same day that we read about in Exodus 12 refers to. So here we are at the time of Abraham, or Abram, actually, before he became Abraham. And God makes a number of different promises to him along the way. This being one of them, we're going to start in verse 13 of Genesis chapter 15. It says, "Then he said to Abram, 'Know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in the land that is not theirs, and will serve them. And they will afflict them 400 years, and also the nation whom they serve I will judge. Afterwards they shall come out with great possessions.'" So clearly a reference to Israel becoming captives and slaves in Egypt, and God bringing them out. So let's back up a little bit here to the previous chapter, Genesis chapter 14, and read a few verses here. We'll start in verse 1 and read the first four verses there. So you might remember that Abraham and Lot had great possessions. Their servants were getting angry and upset with each other because of not having enough water or pasture for their sheep. And so Abram talks to his nephew and says, you know, we shouldn't be arguing over these things. There's plenty of room for the two of us. He said, if you go one way, I'll go the other. And so Lot went down to the plain along the river where Sodom and Gomorrah happened to be. And he seemed to like it down there. It was a beautiful area. And obviously got to know the folks there. And when the kings in that area rebelled against their captors, those that they were paying tribute to, and no longer decided that they were no longer going to pay tribute, those kings were not too happy about that and came and took the cities and took the people away from the city, Lot and his family among them. And that's what we find here in chapter 14, verses 1 through 4. It says, and it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, that they made war with Bera, king of Sodom, Bersha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Adma, Shemeber, king of Zeboiim, and the king of Belam, or Bela, that is Zoar. All these joined together in the valley of Siddim. 12 years they served Chedorlaomer. In the 13th year they rebelled. And look at that. My notes go away. So let me go over here in my Bible and pick up the story, because that is not where I intended that to end. Because basically what we see happening there is that when Lot and his family are taken away, that Abraham goes to get them back. And he does just that. And when he comes back, the king of Sodom, so let's go down to verse 16, it says, so he brought back all the goods, and also brought back his brother Lot and his goods, as well as the women and the people. And the king of Sodom went out to meet him in the valley of Shava, that is the king's valley, after his return from the defeat of Chedorlaomer and the kings who were with him. Then Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was the priest of God Most High. And he blessed him and said, blessed be Abram of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand. And he gave him a tithe of all. Now the king of Sodom said to Abram, give me the persons and take the goods for yourself. But Abram, verse 22, said to the king of Sodom, I have raised my hand to the Lord God Most High, the possessor of heaven and earth, that I will take nothing from a thread to a sandal strap, and that I will not take anything that is yours, lest you should say, I have made Abram rich. So except for only what the men have eaten and the portion of the men who went with me, they can take their portion. So then we move on to chapter 15. And the sequence of events here that we see with, first of all, with the king of Salem coming out and bringing the wine and the bread that we just read about, wherever my place went. It seems that this flows from the Passover through the next day and then on into the first day of unleavened bread. We see that, let's just continue to read here. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, "Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your exceedingly great reward." But Abram said, "Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I go childless, and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus?" And Abram said, "Look, you have given me no offspring. Indeed, one born in my house is my heir. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, 'This one shall not be your heir, but one who will come from your own body shall be your heir.' Then he brought him outside and said, 'Look now toward heaven and count the stars if you are able to number them.' And he said to him, 'So shall your descendants be.' And he believed the Lord, and he accounted it to him for righteousness. Then he said to him, 'I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to inherit it.' And he said, 'Lord God, how shall I know that I will inherit it?' And so he said to him, 'Bring me a three-year-old heifer, a three-year-old female goat, a three-year-old ram, a turtle dove, and a young pigeon.' And he brought them out, brought all these to him and cut them in two down the middle and placed each piece opposite the other. But he did not cut the birds in two. And when the vultures came down on the carcasses, Abram drove them away. Now when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and behold, horror and great darkness fell upon him. And he said to Abram, 'Know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and will serve them, and they will afflict them 400 years, and also the nation whom they serve I will judge. Afterward they shall come out with great possessions. Now as for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace, and you shall be buried at a good old age.'" So if we look at this, it seems to me that in the evening before, where if we go back to the end of chapter 14 where we were reading, or in chapter 14, I should say, when he came back from bringing Lot and his family and the others. When Melchizedek came out, he brought him bread and wine, which I find interesting are the symbols for the New Testament Passover. As we go through that, God gives him the promise of his descendants becoming a great nation. The offerings that he makes, with the animals that he cuts in two, and it's part of the promise and a covenant with God. We see later that God passed through those and sealed that covenant with him. But it seems that all this takes place then over that two-evening period, from where the bread and wine are given through the next day, where the covenant is confirmed after it becomes dark again, which would then become the night to be much observed when the children of Israel left Egypt on that very same day. So that's where this same day, at least in a number of people's minds, that's what it's referring to, is that very day that covenant was made. And so we see in a number of these cases, not just events that took place in on Passover itself, but also into the days of unleavened bread as well. We talk about the feasts in a number of these different locations. The next place that, and again, this is kind of an interesting thing. I'm not sure that you can prove this, and I'm not really sure. We can see the Passover here, but in some of the articles that I read, it referred to Genesis 18 as the next place where we see either the Passover or a precursor to the Passover, as one article referred to it as, takes place. In chapter 18, we read about the time when the one who became Jesus Christ comes to visit with Abraham and to tell him about what's going to happen. So this is just prior to the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. There are some, I guess, some difficulties in reconciling this to being a Passover, but I think it's at least worth taking a look at. So we'll begin here in verse 1, chapter 18, Genesis 18, verse 1. It says, "Then the Lord appeared to him, to Abraham, by the terebinth trees of Mamre, and he was sitting in the tent door in the heat of the day. So he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, three men were standing by him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the ground and said, 'My Lord, if I have now found favor in your sight, do not pass on by your servant. Please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the trees.'" And if we just look at that, we can see that maybe that is related to Passover and the symbols that we see in the New Testament Passover. It's where we get to next that it may be a little bit different. In verse 5 it says, "And I will bring a morsel of bread that you may refresh your hearts. After that you may pass by, inasmuch as you have come to your servant." They said, "Do as you have said." So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah and said, "Quickly make ready 3 measures of fine flour, knead it and make cakes." And Abraham ran to the herd and took a tender and good calf, gave it to a young man, and he hastened to prepare it. So certainly not a lamb called out here, as we would maybe expect if this was a Passover. But then it says, "And Abraham ran to the herd," verse 8, "So he took butter and milk and the calf which he had prepared, and set it before them, and he stood by them under the tree as they ate. And they said to him, 'Where is Sarah, your wife?' And he said, 'Here in the tent.' And he said, 'I will certainly return to you according to the time of life, and behold, Sarah, your wife, shall have a son.'" So again, the continuation of the blessings that God tells Abraham that he will bring upon him and his descendants. So I'm not going to go through the rest of the story. Basically, what happens then is, as it goes on, the Lord decided that, I should not withhold from Abraham what I'm going to do, and lets him know that these men are going down to see what it's really like in Sodom and Gomorrah because of the evil that he's heard about. And Abraham then bargains with him on whether or not he can save the city because of a few righteous people there. We see then that they go down, they see how evil it is. Lot and his 2 daughters are the only 3 that are saved from the city after his wife turns back. And again, if you look at maybe the sequence of events, we have, if this is indeed a Passover, we have those things taking place probably on the first day of unleavened bread when Sodom and Gomorrah are destroyed, or in that same time frame there. So Not sure, but again, that is what one of the articles that I read indicated, that this indeed was the time of the Passover. So we did talk about the next Passover that we do find, and that is pretty clear in Exodus chapter 12. When do you think the next Passover that is mentioned takes place? Anybody have any thoughts or ideas?
After Exodus 12?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, when I first looked at this, I guess my thought was, well, the next one that takes place is when they enter the Promised Land 40 years later. But there is another one that is mentioned before then, and that is found in Numbers chapter 9. So let's head there next. We'll spend a little bit of time on this. So Numbers chapter 9, beginning in verse 1. And here we find Israel in the wilderness of Sinai. So a lot took place around Sinai and in that wilderness. But we're going to start reading about things here in Numbers 9. It says, "Now the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai in the first month of the second year after they had come out of the land of Egypt." So 1 year after the instructions pretty much are given to them that this is the beginning of your year, and the instructions for what they needed to do for the Passover. So this is what God says, verse 2. "Let the children of Israel keep the Passover at its appointed time. On the 14th day of this month, at twilight, you shall keep it at its appointed time. According to all its rites and ceremonies, you shall keep it." So Moses told the children of Israel that they should keep the Passover. And they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the first month at twilight in the wilderness of Sinai, according to all that the Lord commanded Moses, so the children of Israel did. So, what else was going on, though, at this time? Let's continue reading. Verse 6. One of the things that happened here, and I think one of the reasons that we should understand what was happening, begins here in verse 6. It says, "Now there were certain men who were defiled by a human corpse, so that they could not keep the Passover on that day. And they came before Moses and Aaron that day. And those men said to him, 'We became defiled by a human corpse. Why are we kept from presenting the offering of the Lord at its appointed time among the children of Israel?'" So they wanted to do what God wanted them to do. "And Moses said to them, 'Stand still, that I may hear what the Lord will command concerning you.' Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Speak to the children of Israel, saying, If any one of you or your posterity is unclean because of a corpse, or is far away on a journey, that he may still keep the Lord, he may still keep the Lord's Passover. On the 14th day of the second month, at twilight, they may keep it. They shall eat it with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. They shall leave none of it until morning, nor break one of its bones. According to all the ordinances of the Passover, they shall keep it. But the man who is clean and is not on a journey and ceases to keep the Passover, that same person shall be cut off from among his people, because he did not bring the offering of the Lord at its appointed time, that man shall bear his sin." So God says, yes, if you are unable to keep the Passover when it is supposed to be kept, from no fault of your own and not a willful neglect, that you can keep that 1 month later in the same manner that you're supposed to keep the Passover, but 1 month late. However, if you just don't do it for no valid reason, then you're going to bear your sin for that. And that it is a sin for not doing so. And then in verse 14 it says, "And if a stranger dwells among you and would keep the Lord's Passover," and there are some other things that go into this, because not just anybody could keep the Passover. Somebody traveling into the land was not allowed to keep the Passover, but only those who were circumcised and did and kept those things that God wanted Israelites to do were able to do that. So it says, if a stranger who dwells among you and would keep the Lord's Passover, he must do so according to the rite of the Passover and according to its ceremony. You shall have one ordinance both for the stranger and the native of the land. So again, they were to do all the things that the Israelites were to do if they wanted to join in with Israel and to dwell with them. So that's one of the things that we learn here. So it's interesting. And I guess part of why I wanted to go through some of these things is just to see the other things that were taking place around those Passover events. So here we learn something new in this case that otherwise wasn't included. So it revolves around that and the ability then to take a second Passover if you're unable to do so on the first. So the other things that were going on here, because as I said, there's a lot going on at this time amongst the children of Israel. The other thing that I want to talk about a bit is that the tabernacle was being built at this time. So if we look at verses 15 and 16 here in Numbers 9, there is a reference to that. It says, "Now on the day that the tabernacle was raised up, the cloud covered the tabernacle, the tent of the testimony. From evening until morning it was above the tabernacle, like the appearance of fire. So it was always. The cloud covered it by day and the appearance of fire by night." So if we just read there and didn't go anywhere else, it kind of seems a little bit out of place here. I mean, we're talking about the Passover and the second Passover, and then it goes right into, okay, the tabernacle was raised up and the cloud is there and the pillar of fire. It seems a bit out of place, but is it? Well, let's go to Numbers chapter 1. And we're going to read the first verse there. It gives us a little bit more context around some of the things that were taking place. So here it says, "Now the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tabernacle of meeting, on the first day of the second month, in the second year after they had come out of the land of Egypt." So again, it's talking about this same time period here. And if hold your place there, because I think we're going to come back to Numbers again, but I want to look at a few verses in Exodus chapter 40 that also talk about this same time. So, you know, when we tend to think of, you know, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy as kind of sequential, but they're not in all cases. There's different things in each of those books that are taking place at the same time, and this is one of those things. So Exodus chapter 40, and we'll read the first two verses first. says, "Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, on the first day of the first month, you shall set up the tabernacle of the tent of meeting." So again, this same time frame. This first year after they left Egypt, on the first day of the first month. And then down in verses 16 and 17, it says, "Thus Moses did, according to all that the Lord had commanded him, so he did. And it came to pass in the first month of the second year, on the first day of the month, that the tabernacle was raised up." So again, that same time frame. And it's showing that they were building this. They were raising, you know, had been working on all of the weaving and everything that went into it. And here they were ready to put it up and in its place. So let's go back to Numbers, this time Numbers chapter 7. And we look at a little bit more detail around the tabernacle and the things that Moses and Aaron and his sons needed to do. So Numbers 7 verse 1 says, "Now it came to pass when Moses had finished setting up the tabernacle that he anointed it and consecrated it and all its furnishings and the altar and all its utensils. So he anointed them and consecrated them. Then the leaders of Israel, the heads of their fathers' houses, who were the leaders of the tribes and over those who were numbered, made an offering. And they brought their offering before the Lord, 6 covered carts and 12 oxen, a cart for every 2 of the leaders, and for each one an ox, and they presented them before the tabernacle. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Accept these from them, that they may be used in the doing of the work of the tabernacle of meeting, and you shall give them to the Levites, to every man according to his service.' So Moses took the carts and the oxen and gave them to the Levites. 2 carts and 4 oxen he gave to the sons of Gershon according to their service, and 4 carts and 8 oxen he gave to the sons of Merari according to their service, under the authority of Ithamar, the son of Aaron the priest." But to the sons of Kohath he gave none, because theirs was the service of the holy things which they carried on their shoulders. Now the leaders offered the dedication offering for the altar when it was anointed. So the leaders offered their offering before the altar. For the Lord said to Moses, "They shall offer their offering 1 leader each day for the dedication of the altar." And that's what I wanted to kind of get to there. Each day, there were 12 tribes, so 12 leaders of the tribes, 12 days, ending, it appears, on the 13th day of the first month. So they had everything ready. The tabernacle was put up, it was consecrated, and it was ready in place just in time for the Passover that year. Now, at some point during this time, when the tabernacle was being set up, and Aaron and his sons were also being consecrated, because there was a process that they also needed to go through, and that was basically an 8-day-long process that they needed to be consecrated, and then they could come and make offerings at the tabernacle. It doesn't, at least that I can find anywhere, specify when that started and when it ended during that first, basically, 2 weeks of the month. But again, they were also consecrated and ready to begin service in time for the tabernacle to be finished up and just before the Passover. And during this same time, the glory of God appeared to the children of Israel at the tabernacle. Now, we read in Numbers chapter 9, verse 15, just a few minutes ago, where it says that when the tabernacle was raised, the cloud covered the tabernacle. But I also want to read something that happened at the same, same period of time that is described in Leviticus chapter 9. So, again, another place where we read about this same time period. Because in Leviticus chapter 8 and 9, we read about the details of Aaron and his son being consecrated as priests in serving the children of Israel, in serving God. At the end of this, after making all the initial sacrifices, this is what happens. Leviticus 9, verses 23 and 24. It says, "And Moses and Aaron went into the tabernacle of meeting and came out and blessed the people. Then the glory of the Lord appeared to all the people, and fire came out from before the Lord and consumed the burnt offering and the fat on the altar. When all the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces." Now, I don't know if this is different from the cloud appearing when the tabernacle was raised, or if it was a general statement that the cloud appeared at that time or not. Maybe they're both the same thing, or maybe they're separate events. But what we do know is that there was a lot going on at this time, and all to be done and ready before the Passover took place that year. There are several other places where we read about the Passover in the Old Testament. We don't have time to get into them all, so I'm going to mention just a couple more, because these two, I think, are at least worth looking at. Again, I'm not sure that you can prove that these are, at least one of them, is the Passover period, but I found it interesting anyway, and that is the story of Gideon. I read an interesting article where they talk about the events that took place in Judges chapter 6 revolve around Passover, unleavened bread, and Pentecost. We're not going to go through that, as I mentioned today, but I think it's worth noting that the story begins with a prophet telling them that they were going to go into captivity for their disobedience. And then we see that they turn back to God, they repentance, and it ends with their restoration, which is kind of consistent with the message of Passover and unleavened bread. And again, I think it's difficult to prove exactly when any of those events took place, but it's certainly plausible, I guess, that is another occurrence. The other one that I want to at least mention is that, and it's, I guess, probably a little bit more clear, that it doesn't talk specifically about Passover, but I think it makes sense that they did keep the Passover at this time. And it's really the reign of David and Solomon, or the reigns of David and Solomon. In 1 Chronicles 23, we see that not only did David make Solomon king in his place, but that he also established the or reestablished anyway the Levitical system in service at the tabernacle temple when we look into Solomon's reign. First Chronicles 23, verse 31 says, "At every presentation of a burnt offering to the Lord on the Sabbaths and on the new moons and on the set feasts, by number according to the ordinance governing them regularly before the Lord." So this is, you know, they were serving as they were supposed to, the Levites and the priests. It doesn't specifically call out the Passover or day or at that time, but it does talk about the feasts. So I think that it's fairly safe that they were keeping the Passover as well. And this does then continue on into Solomon's reign, as we read in 2 Chronicles 8, verse 13. It says, according to the daily rate, offering according to the commandment of Moses, for the Sabbaths, the new moons, and the three appointed yearly feasts, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Feast of Weeks, and the Feast of Tabernacles. Basically, according to the order that David, his father, had set in place. So that did continue. And again, this only deals with the duties of the priests and Levites, but clearly the feasts are mentioned here. Passover would still have been kept by their families at home. So that was not part of the Levites' and priests' responsibility at that time. So anyway, I thought those were worth at least mentioning in the little bit of time that we have left. And next week, I think we'll kind of pick up here and talk about some more of the instances we find Passover mentioned in the scriptures. But I think before I conclude for the day, what's the point of all this? What do I want you to get from all of this? And I guess for now, I just want you to note that in each case where we see the Passover as being observed, that there are some significant events that take place. In some cases, we see those events are precipitated by God. And in other cases, maybe not specifically in that same way, but there is something that is going on that is important for us to understand and note. That affects Israel and their relationship with God. And we'll see a bit more of that next week. So I think we'll end for there for now.